Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Aramarte Fio on blogtalkradio.com. The views expressed here are not necessarily those of all hosts, guests, or producers, and the show is for a mature audience.
Hey everybody, welcome to Thursday's Hammerdown Radio. I'm your host, Evan Batterton. And all the way from the Netherlands, my co-host has already clogged his way in. Jack, welcome to the show. It's been 2 weeks. How are you?
What is wrong?
Well, maybe he's not in.
Well, no, he's supposed to be. He was saying something about muting and unmuting.
No, we can't hear him.
No, we can't hear you.
Jeff, as soon as you get in, go ahead and interrupt me. I'm going to go ahead and proceed and talk about what the show is going to be for. We've been off for the last 2 weeks. We took Halloween off. I hope everybody had a safe Halloween, and I hope our friends in the pagan community had a great time as well. Jeff had managed to get a hold of a woman named Karen Hughes for the show today. And Karen is a World Bank whistleblower, a very well-known whistleblower, too. I believe she was employed by them. And she is going to be on here very shortly, and we're going to be talking with her. So it should be pretty exciting. Jap is going to try again, and we are going to wait for Karen to call in. The World Bank and whistleblowing for the World Bank and the IMF, anybody that wants to bash these banks is going to be number one in my book, and they always will be. It's something that I've done before, and it's something that I believe in. More power to Karen. Everybody can Google Karen. They can see her Wikipedia page. They'll be able to see some of the things that she's written, listen to videos of her on YouTube, doing other podcasts. Is he in?
He was, and then he dropped.
Well, anybody listening to this, it is not uncommon for Blog Talk to have technical difficulties. So don't give up on us, Karen. Karen will be here and Jap will be here. Unless this is just all out completely screwed up, then this show is going to happen. So don't anybody give up on us, because there's always
Mercury's
plenty to talk about too.
Mercury's retrograde. Mercury is retrograde. So
yes.
Karen is here. Hello, Karen.
Hi. Yeah, Google Chrome just crashed. Google always locks me out of my program. So I'm now trying to start Firefox to get on with Skype. But in the meantime, here I am on the phone. I knew that would happen.
You know, I always tell people that when Mercury's in retrograde that I have the best luck. So I guess that's turning me into a liar right now. So.
Well, now Jap is back. Jap, can you hear us? Jap? I guess I don't know. Now he dropped
again.
You'd
think with a country that developed the CD player and the CD and the cassette tape that they could get technology right, and that they could make phone calls.
Well, somebody
with no
did get technology right. Let's face it.
No, yeah, that's true. Karen, how are you? First of all, it's nice
I'm
to
great.
Meet you.
Thanks for putting this together.
Well, let's see how it goes first. But it's been really good meeting with you. I've talked to some people that have spoken very highly of you. So
that's always good to hear.
Yeah, so let's just, well, we're waiting for Jap to get in because I don't want to diminish from your time at all.
How much time do we have?
We got 2 hours.
Okay, well, we can take our time then.
Okay.
It's a nice chunk of time.
Do you want to just go ahead and give some background on your career before you start your story?
Jap, say
okay,
something.
Sure. Yeah, let me just give you guys a little background, and that way when people sign in, you know, they won't have missed that much. And that is that it's been a real privilege for me to be getting to know a lot of people in this. It's a joint enterprise.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'm on now. Let's see if I can get the
Hello.
Yeah, I'm. What it is I just got in through. Let's see if I can get on with Skype, so I don't have to do it by phone. Okay, there we go. Found the button. Yeah. Anyway, so I started on this whole adventure with a little bit of an idea of what was going to happen, but only a vague idea, and it's just gotten more and more crystal clear, especially as other whistleblowers have joined the enterprise and have filled me in. It's kind of like putting a big jigsaw puzzle together, and
mm-hmm.
So I'll tell you what the pieces were when I started out so you can see how this goes. I just was talking this morning with a guy named Ron Cass, who's been doing a lot of legal work on you know, people that are trying to get the Constitution back for the United States. And, you know, one of the things I had to do was to convince him that a person who had gone to Yale Law School really could be somebody who was serious about the Constitution. And so what I said to him was just go and look at the chronology that I started documenting, and you can see how I, you know, how I got to where I am here. That makes it credible.
All right.
Because, you know, a lot of people that end up with, you know, the credentials and the admittance to the bar are really approaching the problem from a totally different angle.
And not necessarily trusted by the general public sometimes either.
Exactly, exactly. So, you know, it's a matter of letting people see exactly what's going on. And I try to be, you know, I try to be transparent. All right, now it looks like I'm in with Skype, so let me make sure, and then I'll hang up the phone.
Okay.
We're stopping the player on this page so that you do not hear two out-of-sync streams. Okay. Okay. Can you all hear me now?
I can hear you, yes.
Yeah.
Well,
mm-hmm.
I'm still on the phone. This is closed window.
You're not showing
I'm trying
up
to get this
on the board.
Yeah, no, I'm trying to get this on Skype as well is my problem. Doesn't look like it's working. Well, I'll just keep going
still
by
trying.
Phone.
He
doesn't
can't
matter.
Get in.
Somebody's locked out, too?
Jap is. My co-host that basically introduced you to the show and set this up, he's not in. He's unable to get in at the moment, so...
What do you think the problem is?
I really don't know. It appears to be Skype because I call in on a regular phone. And he's trying to get in via Skype.
Yeah.
Right.
So was I.
In the Netherlands.
Oh, no wonder. What's he doing? Is he Dutch?
Yeah, he is. He's Dutch.
Oh, fantastic. Because, you know, I studied economics at the University of Amsterdam. Oh, that's wonderful.
Ah.
Yeah, I love Holland.
If you listen to our show on a weekly basis, I generally start the show out by making fun of the Dutch in some kind of way, lightly. But I usually try and say a little something about the Low Country if I can, because I love him so much.
Or clogs.
Yeah, we gotta get clogs in every show. We gotta talk about clogs. You said you studied what, economics at the University of Amsterdam?
That's right. Yeah, I ended up there in the early 70s. This was just when the problem happened with you know, the Vietnam War, and they
uh-huh.
said love it or leave it.
Well,
now, it looks like I'm on Skype, but I'm not sure.
Okay, now we're getting that complete feedback, so evidently we have you on the phone and Skype because we get your echo.
Okay, so I'll hang up the phone and then I'll call you back if Skype isn't on, all right?
Okay.
Sounds good. I'm not hearing anything.
Yeah, and Jeff has been trying. But see, when he comes in, it says Facebook, and I answer, it's live, and he can hear us, but we can't hear him.
He says he's trying again now.
Okay.
So it appears that the problem is Skype tonight with Blowtalk.
Well, the combination. Jeff?
Right. I don't hear him.
No. I mean, that's all I can do. It says live. That's it.
Yeah. I mean, if he gets in, just go ahead and interrupt Jeff
please.
If you get in.
And just start talking.
He doesn't know what to do. When Karen calls
with
back
the phone.
In, I'll just
Karen?
Do you hear me now?
Yeah.
We can hear you.
Jeff?
Yeah, I'm just gonna X out of Skype. I'll just give up on Skype.
Maybe we should do the show tonight on the technical difficulties of Skype.
Technical problems. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I can speak, you know, for a piece of the show about what kind of technical glitches happen. Like, for example, I can't ever use Google. What do they call that, Hangout?
Oh, yeah. I've got something like that on my phone.
Yeah, I can't. I cannot. I've been locked out of two conversations using that. And
yeah, it's
the first
mess.
Time was extremely frustrating. And the second time I said, you know, let's pre-tape this because if I get locked out, at least I want to know that I was there in some capacity. And sure enough, I was locked out the second time, but we had pre-recorded.
So that's one of
the things about all of this is you start to learn as you run into difficulties.
Jeff.
As a group, you know, just what works.
Yeah.
Jeff, we never have had this problem, Karen. Jeff. Okay, he is live, but he cannot hear us. I mean, he can hear us.
He can hear, but he can't participate. That must be frustrating.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, he
well,
says he's
let me
talking.
Let me just say hello to him in Dutch. Okay. Ja, het spijt me erg dat je niet mee mag praten, maar ja, zo ligt het maar eenmaal. Okay, there. Now we're back in English. It was actually very hard to learn how to speak Dutch because the Dutch all speak such wonderful English.
He just said, holy shit, she speaks Dutch. WTF.
I didn't know
perfect.
That, yeah. Yeah, I do speak Dutch.
Okay.
And,
how did you... You were employed by the World Bank, Karen?
Yeah, for 21 years. I was in their legal department. But when I went in with kind of a mission, and I had no idea what I was getting into because I was clueless about the amount of corruption and the capture of the bank and the U.S. government by the elite. I had absolutely no idea about that. But what I did know was the man who was the longest-serving general counsel was Dutch. He was 80 when I got to know him, and I was somebody who was bound and determined to go into the World Bank because I had studied development economics in Holland and because I had studied law, and if that's what you want to do, that's where you want to go do it, because I didn't know that it was corrupt from, you know, the way it was. So anyway, I applied to the World Bank right out of law school and didn't get hired, and I just kept reapplying. And in the meantime, when I moved to Washington, I got to know this guy, you know, because Washington, they have what they call brown bag lunches where you'll go to a function and you'll meet somebody. And I don't remember the exact function where I met Aaron Brockes, but obviously this was a guy that I wanted to get to know. And I play the cello, and he was a piano player. So I would get to, you know, play chamber music with him once a month or so, over maybe 2 or 3 years. And after a while, he started telling me what it was like to to be the general counsel inside the World Bank. And he was there when the Bretton Woods treaties were negotiated in 1944. He had been at the Dutch embassy. So, and as a matter of fact, at one point, you know, maybe after I'd been at the bank for 10 years, I found a book which was describing what the conference was like, and there was John Maynard Keynes' farewell speech, but, you know, he gave a speech at the end of the conference. And in a footnote, there was a thanks to Aaron Brochus, who had been, you know, representing the Dutch government there at the conference. So Brochus gave me an insider's view to the World Bank. You can imagine for him, you know, a dirty old man, here's this young, impressionable lawyer who thinks it was the most important thing, what he did in his life. So, you know, when I say dirty old man, the only thing that ever happened was at the end of the chamber music, I would run out the door. That would be how it would go. I did the same exact thing with a guy who was then the general counsel of the IMF. He lived not too far from me, and I would play tennis with him, and then at the end of the tennis match, I would, you know, run home. But in the meantime, they would love to regale this lawyer who was interested in finding out what it was that they did. And anyway, so what Brochus told me was that he was general counsel when McNamara came to the World Bank in 1968, and he said if a president is from the Pentagon, law goes out the window. Whatever law there was goes out the window. So when Wolfowitz came to the World Bank, I was waiting for him. And the other thing that Brochus told me was that the legal department was actually the most important function inside the World Bank because it was the hinge between all of the countries and the United States. And if the lawyer did their job, then the place would work. And if the lawyer didn't do their job, the place would not work.
Do you think that's because that the people will only, because they need to hear, that the public needs to hear the term legal or illegal to think something's okay?
No, it's just, think about the flow of information. Everything that we're talking about is all about the flow of information, and there has been no flow of information to the American public. And if you're inside the heart of the beast, and you're the person who talks about what it is that's legal to have go outside and what it is that's legal to have to go from one side of the building to the other, you're in the switchboard of the international financial system. That's where you are. So if you're the president and you've got somebody who's taking everything you say and, you know, spinning it from one end of the financial system to the other, you're constrained.
Right.
That's why the legal department is so important. It's like you either put a megaphone to the presidency or you put up a wall.
Correct me if I'm wrong on this, Karen, but you said that the United States, the American people, don't know anything about what goes on. And is not America, does not America's, delegation to these financial institutions, do they not hold the most power due to the amount of money that they contribute?
You're correct, except that there's something called state capture.
Okay. Can anybody hear me? Evan.
Yes. You're in.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm calling in with some sketchy program, and I'm not sure if it's going to work for a long time. It could be possible that it will cut me off in 5 minutes, but it's working for now. So let's just.
Evan, nice to meet you. You know, Skype has been bought up by these companies. That's why they put their programmers. We're locking you out.
Yes. Very, very fishy. Well, thanks a lot for being on, Karen. I could hear you. You spoke perfect Dutch. How the hell is that possible?
Well, ik heb op de in de pijp gewoond jaren achter elkaar.
She spent more time in Holland than you are alive, brother. That's
not quite. I was there for 3 years over a 4-year period. But you know, I stayed in touch with all my friends.
Yeah, Jeff is fairly young. I mean, he's definitely, the force is so strong in him, though. The force is strong in him. So, I couldn't have picked a better person to partner up with, and Jeff is who basically coordinated all this. So we have really him to thank.
Unlucky. I'm lucky.
Very lucky.
I think you're lucky, Aaron, for coming on.
Well, let me skip to the very end and tell you why Holland is so incredibly important and why I'm so glad I've got different contacts in Holland now. Your royal family is, for some reason, deputized by the black nobility to try to head off all of the rule of law functions.
Yes.
And I found out by accident, I mean, how these things work, I'll never know, but you don't look a gift horse in the mouth, but there's a man in the United States who's something called a sheriff, which they're a law enforcement officer, but, do you remember the Wild West? The sheriffs used to be the ones that would just, if you had a good sheriff, you had a good town. And they left that function with the sheriff. And so there's this man in Arizona named Tom Murphy, and I just copied a distribution list from somebody, and I told this man what I was trying to do. And so when he got something, you won't believe what he got. He got a trust agreement worth $9 quadrillion. You heard me right.
Holy shit.
That's right. And he sent me that agreement. This was, you know how the cabal is trying to have a one-world government?
Right, yes.
They were using him as the trustee for it. And he didn't understand because he thought the document looked good and he knew that he was going to do the right thing. He was happy to take the money. And he showed it to me, 2 days after he got this thing. And so I knew what they were up to. And, we spoke for about an hour, and he said, you're not going to take away $9 quadrillion from me. I can buy back the Constitution of the United States with that. And I said, I am taking that $9 quadrillion away from you. I'm leaving you with a portion that belongs to the United States, and you can buy back our Constitution with that. And then I found a sentence in that trust agreement that finally convinced him that he didn't want any part of it. It was saying, all humanity together is God. I said, is that the kind of agreement you like to sign? He said, no, I don't. Forget it. You can cancel that thing.
Wow.
Yeah. So, but I've been copying the Netherlands Ministry of Foreign Affairs, Ministerie van Buitenlandse Zaken, on this. So we need to have people on the ground who can hold your Ministry for Buitenlandse Zaken accountable, and we're going to get exactly where we want to go.
I've known that country was up to no good for years. I've always known it in my heart. I always have.
It's very true. Karen, I got a quick question, because you know so much about the Netherlands. You must have heard about Joris Demmink.
About who?
Have you ever heard of that name? Joris Demmink, he was the Ministry of Defense.
How do you spell his last name?
Demmink, D-E-M-M, how do you say it, Y-K. It's very simple. It is really crazy.
I haven't. You'll have to tell me about it. What can I say? I don't know everything.
If you don't know, then you don't know. But I'm still amazed that you speak so perfectly Dutch. I sent in the chat here with Evan. I told him, holy shit, you speak Dutch. It's really perfect. I can't hear any accent. It's really crazy.
Oh, well, if we had a ball, you would hear it after a while.
Oh, yeah, I believe that. Well, I'm just glad. This is just crazy that some stupid Skype, it's a multi-billion program, and it's not working, and some cheap ass.
It is working. It's working the way they designed it.
Yeah, exactly. I've heard a lot about them, also intercepting Skype conversations and that kind of shit. I don't really like to use it, but, it's free to call into the show. But it didn't work, so it's good to know. I'm happy about that. We got a lot of questions. Do you want to go on still? Do you want to tell a little bit?
I started at the very bottom, and I ended at the very end. Let me just briefly talk about what's going on in the middle so everybody has an overview of what's happening. And
yes,
that is, I got fired in 2007, but that was actually the best thing that happened for me but I didn't realize it at the time, because what I was doing was I was following a very, very accurate software program which modeled rule of law. And I had only, when I got involved in the whole problem, I had only looked at it from something inside the World Bank, which is actually a microcosm of the world. And at the same time, the political scientist, his name is Jacek Kugler, and he came from Claremont, and he started out developing this software for the Department of Defense. And then I guess he saw at a certain point that the Department of Defense didn't want rule of law or peace. They wanted war. So he figured, who's the right place to bring this program? And he decided it would be the Bretton Woods. And, you know, he showed it to a number of people there, but I was the only one that was interested in rule of law. And anyway, so the way I was working with him was, first, I didn't realize what the power of this model was, and I just took him with me to Ghana. I was working on Ghana at that point, and we modeled a freedom of information law in Ghana, and that's where I saw how the program worked. And then I said, would you mind modeling rule of law at the World Bank for me? And he did, and that was in 2004. And then I could see in 2007 that, you know, we were off track, and I ended up going to the U.S. Congress with that model. And I got fired, but I realized that the model showed that we were going to have coalitions. What it does is it, I can tell you about the model. There are three things that you have to estimate. You have to estimate who the stakeholders are. You have to estimate where they stand on the problem, and then you have to estimate something with, and how powerful they are, and then you have to estimate something which is, you know, it's hard to really assess, but it's something that Jacek called salience. It means, how important is this issue to somebody? So if you're talking about the staff association, that's their one issue, so it's got a very high salience. Whereas if you're talking about the President of the United States, there's a lot going on his plate, so it's going to be competing with other issues. And you have to come up with numbers for all of that stuff. Anyway, so I modeled rule of law inside the World Bank, but Jacek had modeled something else. He had modeled coalitions or the transition of power from west to east. So you know what you see with China coming up. And what Jacek had come up with was that if the United States could keep its transatlantic alliance and involve Russia, that we would not have the East come up very quickly. We would have a smooth transition. Or if we didn't have, you know, if we didn't preserve the transatlantic alliance, then China was going to come up very fast, but through the traditional way, which is World War III. And what Jacek said to me, this was in 2004, he said, we're going to have a nuclear war in the Middle East in 5 years if we don't get these coalitions started. And anyway, so that's what when I got fired, I was always kind of running around trying to form coalitions. And the board knew me as this wacky lady who thought she was forming coalitions, and nobody took me serious at all. And it's only relatively recently that they're beginning to, when Russia Today TV put me on 3 times, that they started to see, oh, wait a minute, something's going on here. And then I got an article up on a blog site in Germany, which has 1.5 million mostly business people per month. And there I was, you know, I was talking about how a military helicopter had buzzed the consulate and broken all the dishware in there. So that's when people started to realize, and I've been sending faxes to the Department of Defense. And, you know, at a certain point, I also ran into this really powerful analysis that 3 mathematicians at the Federal Institute of Technology have done, where they mapped out how this cabal, this, they call it a super entity, really exists, and that it owns 60% of the assets on the 40, you know, all the capital markets, the 43,000 transnational companies, and how it has 60% of their annual earnings. But there's a very, very good article written by a German journalist named Bars Shal, S-C-H-A-L-L. And in that, you can see the links to all the different documents I'm talking about, like the stakeholder analysis. And anyway, that sort of tells this story with the documents behind it. Because one of the things that we were talking about in the very beginning is, how do you gain credibility with people? How do you convince people that you are who you say you are? Because that's one of the things about this game. You never know who anybody is and whether their information is reliable or not. What I just did yesterday was I did a lot of damage control. Somebody had deliberately given me misinformation that I accepted and, almost totally discredited myself. But luckily, I'm working together with a lot of really, really good people by now. And, I spoke to somebody who said, Karen, you just fell for that hook, line, and sinker. See if you can clean up the mess in time.
Right.
He did it very gently, actually. I was lucky. But so what I am is I'm just sort of sitting in the middle of coalitions that really do exist. And I'm trying to make the point to the various people, the players, about where we stand in this whole thing. And the stakeholder analysis that I'm telling you about, one of the whistleblowers I'm working with is a fabulous Scottish woman named Elaine Colville. And she and I have been working the UK Parliament. And I got three statements up there, and Elaine got finally one statement up at the end of July. And she was actually the person who told me to go look at the SEC whistleblowers, which is where I found a really fantastic guy named Mark Novitsky, and he's the one who gently showed me that I had totally screwed up yesterday and got me to clean up the mess. So that's what it is, and as I get more and more people to understand about this coalition and what we're working on, the quality of the information that we have access to is growing by leaps and bounds. It's really we're the coalition that's taking back the world's gold for humanity, and we're going to use the Bretton Woods institutions to serve as a springboard for where we need to go. I mean, one of the really difficult conversations I had was with a Danish journalist who said that the Bretton Woods system was just so totally corrupt that it couldn't serve as any useful springboard. And he said that was also true of NATO, and he said it was also true of the United States, that the people in the United States were so clueless and corrupt that the country didn't deserve to have any coalition going forward. It was just to be scorned and punished. And, I said, give me a break. There are good people, and the good people are going to clean up the mess.
Right.
It really will work that way. And it will. And the chance that we will have that opportunity is 95%. That stakeholder analysis is that good. So, I sort of laid out without being too verbose, hopefully, what things are, and let's just have questions and answers now.
Well, I guess my first question would be, as you mentioned state control earlier, right after I asked the question about the United States voting power by its delegation, I just want to follow up real quick. You talked about the super entity being the cabal. Would that be the major stakeholders or the delegation, if you will, from the G7 nations? Don't the G7 nations comprise over 45% of the voting power alone in the World Bank and the IMF?
Well, let me explain how it works. You have to unbundle it. It's not, it took me many years to figure out who the real stakeholders were. Because if you just take it at face value or the way it's supposed to work in the books, you don't get a good idea of what's actually happened, because the governments have been corrupted, and there are gatekeepers inside all of the and blockages. And the biggest blockage is, of course, the flow of information. So most of the people in the countries are clueless about the fact that their, you know, government is totally dysfunctional and that they've been denied any information from the mainstream media that's owned and controlled by this group, this super entity. It's only a small group of people that understand how it's actually working and what's actually happened.
Hmm.
So anyway, getting back to how is it really, let me just put it out on the table the way I understand it, and I'm happy to answer questions about how I know this and what it means. But it's, you know, people say it's the bankers, it's the cabal, it's the companies. It is that, but there's a group behind that, and the group behind that is the Jesuits. And there's a lot of resistance. There's a lot of resistance to that analysis, and then I just take the experts that showed me. It's only relatively later that I learned this. And people have to understand what that means. I still don't know it completely. But when I say the Jesuits have a whole group of secret societies, and one doesn't really know about the other. They it's divide and conquer at every stage.
It's very compartmentalized, isn't it? In my mind, I was raised with a Jesuit education, and in my mind, the Templars kind of preceded the Jesuits, and I have talked a lot about the Rothschild family, and I have always believed it but never been able to prove it, that the Rothschilds got their first big loans and their seed money from the Vatican. That's just something that I've always believed, and I could be wrong about that.
No, you're absolutely right, and I was just looking at a very good presentation, and they call the Rothschilds the accountants of the Jesuits.
Weren't they? Weren't they officially and publicly the Vatican's bankers?
Yes, that's exactly what they are. So they are subservient to the Jesuits.
Okay. And I've always wondered, because it's always been a chicken and egg kind of thing for me, like what comes first? You know, because it's one thing for them to give the Rothschild family their start, but depending on what the Rothschild family does with their money, they could easily become more powerful than the Vatican. And I don't
know.
No,
there's something even behind the Vatican, actually. But I mean, behind the Jesuits.
And that's where I come in and start thinking about royal families and things like that, and then I go back to the
Rothschilds
and I say they're their bankers.
Let me tell you what else is in this equation, and
okay.
This is the last piece of the puzzle that I know, and I don't know exactly how it works, but there is another species living on this earth, and they are working together with the Vatican, and I'm not sure who's in charge of whom or how it all works there. That's really opaque. But it's definitely part of the you've got to factor that in.
Wow, Jeff, what do you think? What kind of questions do you have? Is he there? Did we lose him again?
Probably.
Yeah, I think we lost him again.
We'll go back and fill him in. That's people don't want this information getting out. Yeah.
Right.
When this fellow Mark Novitsky yesterday was getting me back on track quickly so I could limit the damage, he got zapped so hard. They were so mad at him.
Well,
I mean, it's real teamwork.
Why wouldn't they be mad at him? Nobody in power really wants anybody to tell the truth about him.
They thought they had derailed me. They thought I had discredited myself, and I would have if he hadn't gotten me back on track quickly. I was sort of vulnerable because my husband got really sick of all this whistleblowing. We've been married for 25 years, and he had just, you know, moved the week before. He had just taken all the furniture and moved out. So I was, you know, my capacities were sort of preoccupied. And I was vulnerable, and they derailed me, and I discredited myself. But Mark was able to rescue me and get me, you know, it's really, humanity is absolutely stupendous, this system we have. It's such a delight to be part of it and to see how it all hangs together.
Well, I have a few questions because you being in the legal department, you're going to be able to confirm quite a few things for me.
Is it not true that the stakeholders and the central banks have the legal right to stay anonymous? And if that's true, then why is it that the people, the public, are not allowed to know who controls the flow of their currency? Why is that? If I'm right, that they have the legal right to stay anonymous.
They do. That's the way it was set up. I mean, the whole business about the way the money works and the fact that countries have to pay interest on their debt, that's the height of arrogance. Why would you do it? That doesn't make any sense for anybody but a banker. And any country that tries to get out of that arrangement, their leaders come up with all kinds of horrible things. Kennedy was assassinated. There's a group of really good Latin American presidents that all ended up with cancer. It's a terrible system, and it's not going to continue. What's happened is that in addition to people getting knowledge, the economic forces, I mean, these bankers had been planning this scenario, this wild scenario for hundreds of years. They had it all mapped out, how it was going to work, and they were going to have one world and one world currency. But it just didn't work out that way. Look what the BRICS countries have done, Brazil, Russia, India, China, South Africa. They broke away from the World Bank. They broke away from dollars financing their international trade. There's no way that group can get a one world currency anymore. It's not in the cards. But they keep plugging, figuring that if they can just do something nasty enough, that they'll pull the rabbit out of the hat. But what's happened is instead we've just been able to expose these last nasty tricks, and they're just making it much worse for themselves. I mean, really, that's what's happened. I don't know if you all know about the nasty trick that they pulled in South Carolina where there was supposed to be a nuclear bomb on Charleston. Did anyone know about that?
You know what, and I'm not going to say who it was, but I have a friend whose husband is in the military at Fort Bragg, and there was something that went on, but it was like 2 years ago. I don't know if that's the same thing you're talking about, but
this was on October 8th.
I don't know about Forbes News.
Senator Graham warned about this. He said, if you all don't go into Syria and start World War III in Syria, we're going to have a nuclear bomb in South Carolina. He knew that.
That's what they were planning on doing.
But one admiral in the Navy, and I've got their name somewhere, an admiral in the Navy, and then the guy whose job it was to know where all the nuclear bombs were, the two of them managed to get the bomb so that it was going to explode 600 miles off the coast in the ocean. And then they got fired for interfering with that false flag.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and now there's been 197 other officers in the military that, were good guys, there's a purge going on. But the point is, this is something that you can tell the American people, and that's going to really rile them up. And that information is getting spread because people have also learned not to trust their mainstream media. So the cabal is just making it that much worse for themselves by pulling off these stunts, and each one they try gets more and more wild. There's a group I'm also working with that calls themselves Able Danger. The chief person in there is an air pilot called Field McConnell. And he was a guy who, he knows a lot about how aircraft are, he was a pilot for many, many years. And he could show what actually happened on September 11th, 2001. Anyway, that group has been sort of working. He's put together a lot of intelligence officials, and I've been working with them. So what they do is they try to find out what the next false flag is. And the day before it's supposed to happen, they tell everybody who's involved in it that they see exactly what's going on, and they derail it. And one of the false flags that was about to happen after the bomb in South Carolina didn't go off was there was one of the congresspeople in Florida was going to have a funeral, And they told all the Congress people to get on 4 military aircraft to fly to Florida. So Abel Danger, you know, got information to all of them and said, don't get on that plane because one of two things is going to happen. Either the plane is going to explode, the planes are going to explode, or they're going to fly to the nearest prison and you all are going to go to jail. And so there were only 30 Congress people that got on those airplanes. So he spoils all their false flags. It's really phenomenal what they're doing. So this is showing the cabal that, you know, we see them moving through space. There's nowhere for them to go.
Right. Well, now that Jap is back in, I know that he's been dying to ask a few questions, and whenever he gets done, I want to follow up on what you said about Russia and South Africa and China and other countries breaking away. But before I do that, I'm going to go ahead and pass the torch on to him since he's back in.
Okay, let me ask you this real quick. Is it true that the central bank, the stakeholders at the central bank, are they given the legal right to stay anonymous?
Yes.
Yes,
yes. Nobody knows what they're doing. I mean, look what happened when Germany wanted to see its gold.
Oh, yes.
And they went to the Federal Reserve, and they said, we want to see our, you know, we just want to see it. And they were told, no, you can't see your gold. You know, at the end of World War II, the Federal Reserve went around and collected gold from 60 countries and is storing the country's gold. And so Germany said, I'd like to see my gold. And the Federal Reserve said, no, you can't see your gold. And then they gave, the Treasury Department gave a weird audit to Germany saying, not saying that we went and looked at your gold, not saying we definitely have your gold. It said, I've looked at the books where we've got a schedule of your gold, and the books look okay to me, but sometimes I get the books wrong. And they gave that to Germany. And Germany said, you know what, I'd like my gold back. And then the Federal Reserve said, I'll give you your gold in 7 years. So if a country that loaned gold for safekeeping to the Federal Reserve can't even get its gold back, you've got an indicator for how much leeway anybody on the outside has legally. None. It's just a force there, totally unaccountable. It's a corrupt force.
Okay. Another question. We got just another question from somebody else. How do the neocons? How do they tie into this? And who are behind them? Who are they? And who are the working force behind them? Do you have any idea?
If you say the neocons, you're talking about people like Paul Wolfowitz or any of the people that go into the Treasury Department with revolving, you know, one minute they're the Secretary of the Treasury and the next minute they're doing something in Goldman Sachs. Is that who you mean by the neocons?
Yes, exactly.
Are these the same neocons that were involved? I mean, these are the same. These are 9/11 neocons we're talking about, right?
Yeah. Okay, they are all tied in with the Vatican. They are all tied in with the Vatican. So you can say, yeah, they're bad people, but they'll be, you know, get rid of that one person and there'll be another one just behind them. It's corrupt from the very top.
Yep.
It's like a hydra. You cut off a head and two more pop up. It's just there.
Right, and what they do is they go to what I call the gatekeeper positions. These are people who are supposed to be in oversight, and they find people who are very good at saying one thing in one place and another thing in another place. They're masters at it. And they, you know, they groom these people. And they usually find some, you know, they usually give them two different ways of maintaining control. It's all about control. One way is they reward them, and the other way is they show what happens to them if they don't play by, you know, follow the script.
Exactly.
It's all scripted.
Play by the rules. There's a lot of intimidation going on also. Okay, I just got another quick question. I hear a lot about the return of the rule of law, but what do you think is going to be different than, you know, the generations of slavery that the people are already living under? what is going to be the main difference? I mean, in the rule of law, they can do whatever they want and enforce any law they want and any law they don't want. But what
because
is the main
difference? What it is it's a matter of power and control. And if you add up all of the different groups that we have in the coalition, we have outmaneuvered them. I mean, think of a chessboard, and the king has, you know, we've surrounded the king, and it's checkmate. It's checkmate for that corrupt group. And who is we? We is humanity. And I can show you who, you know, who it is that I'm saying is humanity. And then you can kick the tires and see whether they really are there.
I have a problem with the rule of law for the simple reason of this, and I'm going to quote Eric Cartman from South Park. I don't make the rules. I just think them up and write them down. And that's just my problem with it is that so much of humanity, as you say, has no say in what the rule of law is.
But just think about, okay, let me tell you who the coalition is and how it's working. And then you can figure out whether this group can enforce rule of law. Okay, the way I got there was I was using the securities laws as the, as the guidepost. And under securities laws, if you buy a bond, you're entitled to accurate financial information. And all of the securities agencies are required to have compliance in the securities markets. So there has to be information that flows from the bottom to the top. And when I got fired in retaliation for, you know, trying to get people to follow the rules, and what did I mean by get people to follow the rules? The board of executive directors that represent the countries that own the World Bank are entitled to be in control of the World Bank. But there was a convention that said that the board was just going to vote up or down whatever the president proposed. And I went to them in 2009, and I said, because of this problem with the securities, that your job as the board is to make sure that the bondholders have accurate financial information. They don't have accurate financial information. It's your job to take over the governance. You cannot sit back and wait for the president to propose something up or down anymore. You have got to take back control. And that was when I was locked out of the building. Now, I took that same statement, and I put that in front of 100, you know, all of the countries that belong to the United Nations. And I wrote in the letter to them, telling them that their executive directors were not, you know, they could no longer be required to sit back and let the president vote up and down. And guess what the president is proposing? Whatever the cabal tells him to. So this is taking back the power from the cabal. Now, what I said to the UN, there was a big scandal. You know, I speak Dutch, and I happened to be in the Netherlands when Herman Zijfels, whose job it was to fire Paul Wolfowitz, because Paul Wolfowitz gave a 30% pay raise to his girlfriend inside the World Bank, Shahariza. Anyway, what Herman Zijfels said, and he wrote this in the Gelderlander, he said that any executive director that tried to fire Paul Wolfowitz was being blackmailed. There was somebody called the New York Madam. This was a very expensive prostitution ring. And Elliot Spitzer had gone to the New York Madam, and he lost his governorship of New York. And what Herman Zijfels said in the Gelderlander was that any executive director who tried to fire Paul Wolfowitz was being blackmailed with this, or if they spent their money in a bad way that made them vulnerable, they were also being blackmailed with that. And the next day, Odd Melkert, this is Herman Zijfels' predecessor. Odd, by that time, was working at the UN, but he had been on the ethics committee. Anyway, they asked Odd Melkert for, in front of, I think it was, I forget which television program it was, something with a candlelight. Anyway. Yeah. They asked Odd whether, you know, whether he was being blackmailed. And he said that he was a boring man, but he knew other executive directors who were being blackmailed. Anyway, I took that information back to first I went to Senator Lugar, who was the one who had written three letters telling the World Bank not to fire me. And Senator Lugar's people told me to go to the U.S. Treasury. So, I, you know, before I went and put this statement in front of the, you know, the U.N. missions to the U.N., I went to the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence, and I said, this, you know, this kind of blackmailing other countries' ambassadors does not sit well, and where is your oversight? And, they, you know, they just fluffed. But now, look, Germany is no longer sharing its intelligence information. So I went, there's something called the Council of Governors. 10 governors are liaising with, in the Department of Defense, the Assistant Secretary of Defense, who's liaising with the Homeland Security. His name is Peter Verga. I've been writing to that group, you know, I must have sent them 20 faxes, maybe 200 pages worth of faxes, saying, you're supposed to prevent this country from sinking into martial law. What are you doing about all of this? And, you know, and of course I showed them what I had given to all of these countries. So this is the coalition. They all know that the U.S., the people who don't know anything about this scandal are not being given the opportunity to clean this up. So the U.S. credit rating is affected. And I've gone to the three credit rating agencies. A U.K. lawyer who I think, you know, was somebody who worked with U.K. intelligence, when I got my first statement up on the U.K. Parliament, he said, Karen, it's time to go to the credit rating agencies. So they have had a front row seat in all of this. And then Standard & Poor's lowered the U.S. credit rating, and Eric Holder started suing them. And what did Standard & Poor's say? They said, oh, in retrospect, maybe we don't have to lower the U.S. credit rating because the dollar is the international reserve currency. Now, of course, that was really a huge blow because in the meantime, 25% of international trade is no longer denominated in dollars. And, you know, when there was this problem with the debt ceiling, that was when there were some currency trade swaps between Europe and, I forget whether it was China or who it was. So the U.S. is on the verge of losing its international reserve currency status. So, you know,
what currency would then become the reserve? Would it be the euro or the pound?
That's the question. What the cabal wanted was they wanted there to be a single currency. And that's not going to happen because the BRICS countries will not allow that to happen. They're bound and determined that each and every currency is going to be its own currency. And what you have is you have the world's gold, which people don't know how much it is. It's about 700,000 metric tons. That's, you know, that's three or four times as much as the World Gold Council says is there. But there's a German lawyer in the Philippines who has accurate records of where all the gold is. And so the idea is to take that gold and to use that to underpin the world's currencies so that we no longer have debt-based currencies. And the countries are no longer going to be locked in and bound up by the cabal. We've fired the cabal.
The United States is never going to lose its debt. Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can now. Go ahead, brother.
Oh, sorry.
Just start over.
I was saying, you said that the countries that they will have to get out of debt, but that's, to me, it sounds like an impossible thing. I'll tell you why it's not.
When the countries were giving up their gold, they were given bonds in return. And this German lawyer has all these bonds that are denominated in astronomical amounts. So you go to the cabal and you say, these bonds that you issued, we're going to use that to cancel the debt. And the amount that's left is much, it's manageable. Once you know, it nets out.
Doesn't that amount depend on the faith of the people?
Doesn't it depend on the what?
The faith of the people.
No. Gold is worth a lot of money.
Right.
That's going to underpin the currency. It's not on the face of the people. It's not on their backs.
Well, who determines how much the gold is worth? And are they trustworthy?
No, you don't have to do that. It's
okay.
Just going to be there as a backing. What you have is you have these bonds that are denominated in actual amounts that are going to cancel against the debt.
Wow.
It's going to retire the debt with money that those banks owe. They had to give out promissory notes when they collected that gold. They didn't think anybody was ever going to be able to present them. And the world is presenting them. I mean,
you know,
it's hard to take this in because I've been living with it for, you know, for a long, long time, and you're just hearing it for the first time.
Right.
But think about it. 700,000 metric tons of gold and the bonds that were issued when that gold was collected. And plus, they earned interest during all these years. So there's a lot of money on top of the denominated bonds. It's the world's money. It's not the elite's money. We're taking our assets back.
Right.
People are taking their assets back.
Yes.
I don't see that. How would you
have to see this $9 quadrillion trust that the cabal was going to sign with this sheriff.
Mm-hmm.
So you can see what we have caught them red-handed doing and prevented them from doing.
We caught them. Yeah, they did.
We caught them. How did we do that? I don't know, but we did.
What is it going to change? It's not going to change anything, right? I don't think that the elite, the cabal, whatever you want to call them, I don't think they see. I don't think they work in the goodwill of humanity. I think that
no, but we're showing humanity. Humanity is watching as we confront them.
You've interacted with them personally, Karen. You've interacted with them personally. Can you say one way or the other whether or not this cabal, this elite, is worried at all?
Because I can show you the emails that they're sending me to either get me off track or bribe me or get me confused. They are very worried. And I just went and saw a movie that they put together because they figure that people are asking questions about the Fed and they needed to have an answer. And I just sent them an email saying, you know, you made a nice movie, but you forgot to mention that everybody knows that the Fed is owned by the super entity. And
right.
And you forgot to mention that in the movie. This movie is totally, you know, people are going to walk out shaking their heads. It's a waste of time.
I got a question. I have said that the Federal Reserve was the result of the members of this entity back before 1907, right before the panic of 1907 hit, by them cornering the market. Have I been a liar?
That's part of it, but it formally started in, look at the Bank for International Settlements.
The bid, yes.
Which was in 1930. That was to collect Germany's reparations after World War I. And I think the idea of fiat banking was developed in Europe, and it took a long time before it came into the United States. It was difficult because the United States resisted that for many years, and then they managed in 1913 to get that.
Congress went home and they
managed to pass this law.
Okay.
Aren't you talking about, when we're talking about Europe, aren't you talking about the sons of the Rothschilds? One went to France, one went to Italy, one
yes,
to Germany,
exactly.
one stayed
that's,
at home.
That's when it started, But don't forget that they were the Vatican's bankers.
Yes, they are bankers for everybody. They don't really care who they are.
Yeah, Carl was very close with the Vatican. He didn't even have to bow to the Pope when he kissed his ring. That's how fond the Pope was of Carl. Carl was believed to be the dullard of the five brothers, but he was the one that actually ran their courier system, which was responsible for Nathan taking over power of England's central bank.
Just think about internationally, what what you had. You had the elite that colonized the world. International meant elite. And now with the Internet, we people have caught them. We've seen what they've been doing. We can track back to history, and we're taking it away from them. We're taking away their toys. We're saying, no, we don't sign on to this. We see who you are. It's not happening. And that's what I'm talking about with the rule of law. I mean, it doesn't have to be that you go out with weapons and chop off their heads like you had in the French Revolution. And that was actually, you know, set up as a kind of a playbook. It's all history has been one series of events after another according to their playbook. And what's happened is their playbook isn't working anymore because we see what they're doing and we're anticipating it and we're watching them and we're saying, no, it's you're off the stage. It's now humanity on the stage. And when you say, what is humanity going to do, that is a good question. I don't have an answer, but we are going to have we're going to be setting up our own systems and we're going to be stumbling through it and we're all going to be learning from each other and going forward. We're taking away toys of the elite. That's what's happened.
I think it's a perfect idea. I don't see it happening real fast because I don't think the majority of the world and humans know what's going on. But
not that many people do, but enough do.
That's true. It's a percentage that does. It could be enough. I'm not real sure if I look at 2 years back.
Well, let's put it this way. It's a work in progress, but we have turned the corner, and it's now up to us to bring everybody else on board and tell them what we've gotten so far.
Very true.
Right.
That's very true.
That certainly was. I mean, that's why we have the show.
Exactly.
That's the point of the show. That's the point of our page. I mean, that's the point of you and the whistleblowing. I mean, we definitely do. One of our regular guest hosts on the show, Blair from Scotland, he had mentioned something to me he wanted me to mention amnesty for whistleblowers, international whistleblowers at that. What's the chance of that happening, Karen?
I can tell you that when people ask me, do I have a platform, is there something that I think has to happen, I say that amnesty for whistleblowers has got to be at the very heart of it because that's how you know that the information is flowing. The people on the inside see what's happening and they have to feel like they can get the story out. And the reason why it's very, very important to accomplish this now is because we have the internet, but it's not going to continue for, you know, indefinitely. The strength of the internet is now being taken away from us. So we've got to this is a turning point, and we've got to capitalize on it because if we don't do it now, we will never be able to do it again. So when I said that the elite were the ones that were managing the international regime, what's happened is because of the internet and because of the way the World Bank works with whistleblowers in different corners, we have reached out to all of the pockets of, I don't know what you want to call it, people who don't want to be part of the New World Order. And we've resisted. And there's no way that they're going to get the New World Order. They can certainly destroy humanity if we're not if we're not able to make this work and take away their toys before they kill us all. You know, they may kill us all in spite. That's what we're up against. But we certainly, they are no longer going to get the New World Order. That much is clear.
It's
not in the cards for them.
I think it's one of the two, like you said. Or they get the New World Order, or they will destroy humanity, or we would have to have, the X Factor, something. We need to be lucky.
I don't think it's lucky. I think it's 95% likely that we will succeed. The only question is whether they will take us down. That's all.
Yeah,
it's a race.
Exactly.
We've already gotten the coalition there in place. The coalition is in place. And, you know, I can show you the best way to know that the coalition is in place is look how hard they tried in Syria and it didn't work.
Oh, yeah. They are trying
that's because we have the coalition. That's because the coalition is functioning.
That's a good point. That's a good point because they are showing signs of fucking stress because of all the crazy false flags going on, all the, well, the obvious misinformation. It's just, they are pushing it really hard, and it looks like they need...
Well, the point is, they're making it worse for themselves, because they're,
yes,
they are now in full sight of enough people that see what they're doing, and we're just documenting how stupid they are right now.
Right.
They're just making it worse for themselves. And what I see in my email very frequently now is that people are coming to me who are, you know, children of the cabal, and they're trying to show me, they're trying to give me information, they're trying to buy amnesty. And I think that's
good
amazing thing, actually.
That's
more of them that do this, it's going to be a stampede.
Well, yeah, if we can thin their numbers out, I mean, like, they're trying to thin our numbers out, then we're better off.
No, no, no. If you do that, then you stop the progress. It's more important for us that we have humanity than that we punish people. Don't you agree?
Well, of course. Of course, yeah.
So we need to have them all joining us and stopping the people that they know and telling the people they know to join the stampede. We'll have a stampede towards humanity is what we'll have.
I certainly agree with the 95% chance that it's going to happen, but with the condition that we are allowed a length of time to get it done. Because you had mentioned something earlier about China gaining power economically, that they could do it the traditional way and declare World War III. I think it's a lot. And then you talked about Russia breaking away from the World Bank and the IMF, and certainly there was a lot of talk about Vladimir issuing warrants for George Soros' arrest and kicking Rothschild out of his country and things like that. And then
they killed the two Vaticans last year that were in Russia.
Wow.
Yeah, that's true. Russia is very...
Not Vaticans. What are they? Jesuits.
The Rothschilds.
Russia doesn't play. They killed the two Jesuits in Russia. In October last year. Not this October, a year ago.
What does it say for the world that we have a Jesuit Pope now that has the power to rule over a billion Catholics?
He doesn't. He can't get into his apartments.
Okay. It looks like a maneuver. I mean, if you say that the Jesuits are really in power, and then all of a sudden we have a Jesuit Pope, it almost looks like they're pushing their pieces on us in a way.
All right, I'll tell you what I know about that, and I'm not this is guessing more than anything else, so I could be wrong, but you know, there was a case where Pope Benedict Ratzinger was guilty of child trafficking and also financial crimes. And Queen Elizabeth was deposed at the same time. But, the cabal is so strong that this information is not out there. But then what happened was the International Court of Justice used that decision in order to appoint somebody to go out and start creating projects that were supposed to be funded by the gold. So they used this as a pretext to clamp onto the gold, to say that they owned the gold. And I found this guy that was preparing all these projects. I said, who told you you could do this? What are these projects? And instead of sending me the information, he said, do you want to prepare a project too?
Okay.
So let's go back to the Jesuits. The Vatican always wanted to go to Jerusalem. Somebody just sent me an email talking about how you had to divide the Temple Mount into three pieces and give a piece to the Catholics. So they're now, instead of being in control and grandiose, they're going to get a foothold in Jerusalem, and then they think they can work from there.
Hmm. Yeah, I've actually heard that too.
So I went back to that guy, and I said, I don't think you're going to get too much peace by taking the Temple Mount away from the people that have it now. That doesn't seem to be a good way to get the people living in Israel to make peace with their neighbors. I don't think that's such a brilliant way to start.
No, definitely not.
Yeah, but I'm just saying they're trying everything they know how. They pulled out all the stops, and they're just falling over themselves. They have no plan because they didn't think they were going to have a plan. They had a plan that was, you know, for the last 700 years, and, you know, it just it didn't pan out for them, poor folks.
How scared should people be of the cornered dog, though, or should we keep pressing?
A very good question, and I think – I mean, I don't have a grand plan at all. I probably should, but what happens is every morning I wake up and I go to my computer and I see who wrote me and I try to answer my emails. It's kind of like surfing. You know, you just have to ride the wave as it goes and hope that you don't get wiped out.
Exactly.
In other words, there are all these forces and you can't go any faster than, you know, and one of the main forces is how quickly are people going to wake up and join the bandwagon? And what are they going to, you know, what is it going to take to keep them moving on this in the right direction? You know, it's like surfing more than anything else. Or I don't know if anybody's ever windsurfed. You have to see where the wind is and then use the wind.
It seems awfully risky to me to windsurf. It really does. I'm not much of a risk taker.
We have a choice.
Right. Well, yeah. I mean, we really have to. We really don't have a choice unless we want to embrace a one world government, and that's not something that we want
to do. Not in the cards. Nobody wants that.
Yeah, because it's you know, the central control means a very limited definition of freedom. It really does. In order to keep everybody under one banner, I mean, there has to be limited freedom, and that's not something that we want to do. We got about 35, 40 minutes left, something like that. I wanted to ask you about something else that's kind of passionate with me, and that's the Global Environmental Facility, because I don't care too much for that either. It's got to be tied to the IMF and the World Bank because it came well after, I believe, in what, 90s? It was in the 90s? And the GEF it started off as the World Conservation Bank. They were trading debt for equity and were the first institution to openly do so. And they're refinancing the entire Southern Hemisphere with loans that they know that those countries cannot pay back. And that's another reason why I've not cared much for the World Bank or the IMF, because of their loan conditions. They're giving loans that people can't pay back.
Yeah, that was deliberate. That was for control. And I'll tell you what I would do, but obviously it's not clear to me that I'm going to be allowed to say what's going to happen. But if this gold comes up, which it should, then there will be a lot of funding that doesn't have to be paid back. And then it's going to be up to each individual country to figure out how it wants to spend its money. And the real challenge, I think, is going to be to get the governance sufficiently cleaned up so that the funding is going to be actually to benefit the people as opposed to whatever, you know, governance elite is able to dictate. That's going to be the hard part. I mean, I think these loans are going to be, you know, that's where I think we are.
Yeah, there has to be a lot of debt forgiveness. There has to be.
I don't think we have to use the word forgiveness. Don't forget that you've got all of these notes that these stupid bankers have issued that they are going to have to swallow. It's one, you know, it's their debt, and our debt is going to cancel.
Right.
It's not forgiveness. It's just going to be netting it out.
Right.
You have not seen the denominations of these bonds. And the interest that has been accruing on this gold, that's ours. There's so many assets there. It's unimaginable how many assets there are. But the real challenge is are the people going to know about it in time and insist on it?
Right.
Or is the cabal going to continue to hide it? Are we going to get enough people to believe in it and demand it? And then if we do, and we keep it for ourselves and the cabal doesn't grab it from us, which is what they're trying to do, if that happens, are we actually going to be able to find things that, that are worthy of financing, that are really going to benefit us? Do we know what's good for us? That, to me, is the challenge.
Are right, we, yeah, because as you switch...
capable, and the thing that I understand is that there are so many patents that we have prevented from being utilized because people wanted to earn profit on misery. So, we're going to take off. All of these patents
right.
are going to come out, and we're going to have all of this, you know, free energy, and you name it, we're going to have. And to me, one of the real challenges is going to be how are we going to have a smooth transition? Because if the armies aren't needed and you have unemployment, you know, then the economy's crashed. So we're going to have to be able to keep, you know, as we move into this area where there's all this wealth and assets, can we do it in a way that are we smart enough to manage our wealth in a way that isn't going to, you know, lead to inflation? And are people going to just turn to heroin addicts if they don't have to work for a living? I mean, there are all kinds of questions we have.
Yeah, I think the best question is if we're successful, can we prevent another cabal from rising? But
yes, and that's where the whistleblowers come in. Because having lived through this struggle, we know very well what the loopholes are and what the means of grabbing control are. And so we can, you know, we can help in the transition. I hope there'll be a role for us. Because to me, the real challenge is going to be in the very beginning to make this irreversible. And that's
right.
where I think the whistleblowers are really going to be helpful, because we know, having, you know, been crunched, we know what's broken. We know where the loopholes are. We can fill those things. I think
right.
I think there's got to be a major role. It's kind of like, I mean, I'm mixing metaphors, but imagine that somebody has swallowed barium and then goes through an MRI. The whistleblowers are the barium. We know, you know, we have highlighted where the diseased parts are.
That's true. Jeff, what do you think?
Oh, yeah. Talking about whistleblowers, like them being the loophole, with you being a whistleblower and you are not getting any mainstream attention, you know, from really mainstream outlets, media outlets, what do you think personally about Edward Snowden and the media attention he has been given since day one? Because since day one that this supposed leaks came out, he was in every media outlet on the entire planet. What do you think of this? Do you think that there's...
Well, I can tell you. There is a guy that I've been working with. I've mentioned Mark Novitsky. He was pointing out these problems when Edward Snowden was in diapers. And it's true. I mean, there was a reason why Edward Snowden's information was going out, I think. First of all, I think he's for real. I'm not saying that he's not a real whistleblower, but I'm saying that his story was used, and it was to get Americans so riled up about how they had no freedom that they were going to go out and revolt, and then there could be a military crackdown, and there would be martial law.
So
no, and that's also what's going on with race, by the way. There are all these reasons why stories are put in the press and why stories don't make it to the press. And that's actually one of the advantages that I have now, is when people say, well, you know, we haven't heard of you, and I say, yes, that's because I'm telling you that the mainstream media is owned by this cabal, and they are keeping
exactly.
you stupid.
So
the fact that you haven't heard from me shows. Shows
why,
how this
why
works.
Why are giving Edward Snowden this attention and not you? Is it like they're using him and his supposed information to achieve another goal, or is there more behind it? Because
no, because in the alternate media, there are I would say that one third or maybe less of the alternate media is real alternate media, and the rest is. Cabal pretending to be alternate media. And I could always find out who they were by whether they were going to allow me to talk about the coalition and whether they were going to allow me to talk about how we were going to, you know, what the cure was and the fact that we were 95% likely to get it. They only wanted me to get people angry.
Have you ever been on the Alex Jones show?
Yeah, he's Vatican.
Right.
His father was something in the, you know, whether it was Knights Templar or who it was. No, he's part of that two-thirds of the alternate media that's cabal pretending to be alternate media.
Thank you. That's what I wanted to hear. So did you ever request us to get on the Alex Jones show?
No, I would – look, when I was trying to get my story out, I would take anything, no matter – how, you know,
oh, yes.
And I would just figure that I would have to have a big enough mouth that I could, you know, in one sentence say what I wanted to say before they shut me up.
Very true. Very true. I could see that, and that was, you know, that was something I was thinking, because Alex Jones is really deep into this. You know, that's my point. It's my point. And just like you said, all these alternative medias who are pretending to be alternative medias. Yeah, it's just crazy how much the control they have. It's really crazy how much control they have into the movement, into the alternative media, and into... Go ahead.
We find ourselves in a pickle because we have to keep fighting, and it's really hard to get through. Now, you said that you won't say that Edward Snowden is a fake, but I have no problem saying that he is. I don't think he's genuine at all. Jack, what do you think?
Sorry, about what? Alex Jones.
No, yeah.
Are you talking about?
None of them.
You
none of them. I don't like Alex,
Jones.
And I don't think I think Edward is about as legit as a wet noodle. And you know, I got to say the same thing about Julian Assange. He's a whistleblower, but he lives better than more than 90% of the American population. I just don't...
He got his shit covered. He got his protection covered. He got everything covered. And how his website is set up is beyond me. How he's still alive is beyond me. That's about it. It really figures.
Well, you know, this question about how a whistleblower can still be alive. I mean, I can tell you how it works.
Okay.
And that is that if you embed yourself with a group of people, and if you make sure that your story is always current, and of course when you're uncovering a cover-up, then if something happens to you, that uncovers the cover-up. I try to make sure that at any given point, every conceivable thing that I know is out there, so that there's never any advantage for cutting me down. Because what I've done, anybody can do at this point. It's kind of like you carry the baton. There's nothing further for me to do at any given day than that I've done the day before. Do you know what I'm saying? So anybody
Oh, absolutely.
Can, and everything I've done is out there, so anybody can pick up what it is and just carry it further. So get rid of me. All right, you've gotten rid of me, but and maybe I've gotten you mad and I'm obnoxious, so you get the satisfaction of that. But there'll be some kind of a reaction which is not going to be helpful to you. And I tried to make it at any given point structure it so that the reaction was always going to be there. And before anybody knew about me, there's a PR guy named Larry Garrison, who I knew had the clout to get my story out and would if anything happened to me. So when it was the most dangerous, I had that life insurance policy. And he was attacked, by the way. People didn't want him there, and he stuck by me.
Right. Yeah, using the buddy system works on so many levels, doesn't it?
Yeah, that's exactly what it is, the buddy system. Yeah.
Yeah, it's just really, really important to use the buddy system. We're starting to wind down on time. The show is actually about an hour and 50 minutes. As traditional with our show, we typically take callers. They're not censored when we do take callers. If we have a caller, Ruth Ann, just go ahead and let them in.
And let's see. I mean, maybe they'll ask a question. Maybe they just have a comment. We'll see what we got.
Okay, we have Carol. She's been waiting a long time. Carol?
Okay.
Carol.
Hi. Hi, Carol Keene Isaacs here. Karen, it's a pleasure to hear you. I'm a grandmother from here in the United States, and I don't consider myself a whistleblower, but maybe I am. I'm not really. I just I've discovered some fraud in the mortgage market, and it concerns bonds. It concerns the issuance of bonds upon the backs of our children. And I don't know if you've heard of me or not, but I'm able to go in, and I'd like to join your group and try to help if I can, kind of go the way you're going.
The more the merrier. There's a group of people that are doing a lot of work on the mortgages because the banks were just grabbing homes from people because they needed the assets.
It's not the mortgage I'm working on. It's actually the identity theft and the enslavement of humanity. I have a 7-year-old grandson that he had 97 warrants put upon his head when my daughter purchased a home in 2008, and it's happening everywhere. And I can say,
get it all documented, and absolutely. I mean, the whole point is to try to clean things up. The United States is a terribly corrupt place.
Mm-hmm. Goldman Sachs started a buy and sell program. Are you familiar with when Metropolitan Life Insurance Company demutualized?
No, I'm not. But I mean, we need a lot of information about whatever fraud you've uncovered, you know, and make it public.
It's something that Goldman Sachs and one of their compadres, along with Metropolitan Life Insurance Company, planned whenever they demutualized, and then Metropolitan Life Insurance became a life insurance company, and then they became a bank, and then, of course, they bowed out very quickly as if no one ever saw them. So if you get a chance to talk with anyone about that, I've talked with David over your friend, David. David, the guy that does the cyber technology for the paraplegics or the differently abled, the guy over in England. Abel Danger's friend, David.
Oh, okay. Oh, that David. It's funny. I never knew that. You told me something I didn't know.
Oh, he's wonderful. And I forget the name of his company, but I spoke with him for about an hour, and he suggested I try to get with you. And Lynn Honeycutt, one of his friends, called me tonight and said, Carol, she's on. I'd like you to try to get with her because...
I mean, what we're discovering, I mean, you're just hearing this now. It's just such an incredible party and synergy as we all find each other and reinforce each other. It's just really
I think it's
a
meant
joy.
To be.
And it's just sort of, you know, it's like the multiplier effect. It's just sort of crescendoing now. I don't think we're stoppable.
I agree.
You take one of us and 10 more appear. That's the idea.
Do you know how to get in touch with me, Carol?
What is Jeff was saying something. Jeff, would you speak up, please?
Yeah, we're hard to hear you.
Oh, yeah, I'm having some troubles with the microphone. I said if one of us goes down and 10 more will stand up. and that's really the method. It's really important to have people you can trust. You can really trust them. And if something happens, then those people will know what happened and why it happened. Because, you know, it's just very important to have people you can really have your back and who are there to, you know, be able to stand with you to get your information out. That's a really important factor. And, of course, get a good platform to get your information out.
In order to cover the spread of this massive infrastructure, because it's massive, and it's compartmentalized, like Karen said, it's so compartmentalized and it's so massive that you have to have a buddy system and you have to have people that will constantly share information because it will be too big of a workload to take on.
But they have one centralized location through their technology that they go in through. There is one place that all this goes, and their little disconnects aren't really real. They are red flags. They just pretend like the left hand doesn't know what the right hand's doing.
When in actuality, one washes the other at all times.
Correct.
There's always, like Karen said, a gatekeeper, and I'm sure those gatekeepers have secret passwords for each other.
But the part that I find really miraculous, that's the only word I can use, is, I mean, just think about it. How did this sheriff Tom Murphy with $9 quadrillion worth of trust fund. Get me that document. You know, how did that happen? I don't know.
How did I find?
Maybe a guilty conscience. A guilty conscience somewhere.
A crook sent my daughter the file, and it's a crook's file. It's a template for how they do it to everyone. Even you, Karen, you may have even had it happen to you, and you may not even know it.
Yeah, I mean, we all have to learn from each other. Exactly.
Right, and you know, it's not the Jap or I speak for one another, but the bottom line is that you'll always get a message from one of us or the other through the other one if need be. That's the important thing, and that goes for any mainstay here on our show, whether it's him or I or Ruth Ann or Sarah or Blair or Charlie. Even Charlie's been on a few shows. The people that are mainstays on our show, we don't speak for each other, but we know what's going on with one another. We do.
How long have you been doing this show? It's a lovely show.
We've done it since the show's been going on for a while, but then I took over and then Jap joined me and we took over in May. So we've been doing the show since May.
A few months? Two or 3 months, I think.
Then we started our page in August, though, which really, the page is a powerhouse, really. I mean, considering we haven't bought any kind of advertisement or anything, it's really gotten a lot of attention. We won't buy any advertisement. Facebook will not get any of our money. And we will continue to do it the old-fashioned way, and that's make friends and network. And that's just the way that it's going
to
be. As long as one of us is alive, then the show will go on. It always will. If one goes down, then we'll bring someone else in, and the show will keep going. The show will keep going.
It's a good platform. If people want to get information out, or they would like to stay anonymous with information they want to get out, this is also a good platform, because if you got solid information and you need to get it out there, you can always contact us. And for people listening in not really knowing who we are, we have a page, and it's called Thursday Hammerdown News Group. It's real easy to find. We can link to that back later on. I will post it in the chat. But it's a great platform for people. If you want to get information out, or you want to talk about some controversial stuff or blowing a whistle, just contact any one of us. We will be more than happy to get to that platform, because people deserve that, because the mainstream media won't do it. Most of the alternative media won't do it. Not all of them. I'm not saying that, but most of them are also controlled through big websites. The radio,
they will not touch certain things. And Alex Jones, I agree with you folks, and really, because I wouldn't want to go on a show if I could.
Right.
Oh, no. I would love to call in. I really want to call in one time, but I'm pretty sure that he will cut me off within a minute. I'll tell you right now, because he will get a smoke. Because, I don't know, I really hate it.
You'll have about as much time to talk as in a New York session. Carol, I want to take one more call before we go, because we have about 10 minutes left. Carol, thanks for calling in.
Thank you very much. And Karen,
all of Karen's
information somehow.
Yeah, all
well,
Karen's Facebook link is on our page.
Go to my website.
Too.
It's kahudis.net, and there's a contact page.
Okay.
And we'll put that on we'll put that out there and promote it too, Karen.
Okay.
We'll put that on the page, and we will promote that as well. Ruth Ann, let's go ahead and take one more caller, and we'll keep it quick, and then I'll thank Karen, and then I'll close out.
Okay, this is caller 520. You're on the air.
Hey, guys, it's Joel.
Hi, Joel.
What's up, buddy?
Hey.
Welcome.
Karen, I just wanted to say lots of great information. It's a pleasure to speak with you, and thanks, Evan and Jap, for having me on. And Ruth Ann.
It's a pleasure.
I just wanted to bring up something maybe Karen could help me with. I saw a video earlier about Wolfowitz, and he was talking about the fear of the World Bank against BRICS. And then you were starting to talk about false flags. And so I was just going to ask, do you know of any connections, definitely, that you can confirm you know, from the World Bank to false flags?
That's a good question.
I'm trying to think.
I mean, I know that's a lot to ask, but I mean, you
did. Well,
you
I can
did,
tell you what happens when the World Bank goes into a country. Yeah.
Structural adjustment programs.
If it's a country which has a corrupt government, then the projects that go in there are, you know, they're cabal projects. Whereas if it's a country which has a real government and real people, then the projects that go in are for the country. So I don't know if that answers your question about false flags, but I think the extent of a false flag is going to depend on whether the government is so corrupt that it's going to sit there and let, you know, these false flags take place.
Yeah, cause, I mean, I'm just wondering because as a lot of American citizens here, we've been having a lot of these shooting issues happening in these gun-free zones, and, you know, we all know that there's the UN Small Arms Treaty, and World Bank and UN are, you know, hand in hand, right?
Not entirely.
Really?
Not entirely.
Okay.
I mean, yeah, they're both cabal institutions, but the thing about the World Bank is it's a cooperative, and the countries, you know, if you've got a big country like Russia or India, their voice is heard in a way that it's not going to be heard in the UN. It's not as easy to manipulate that, and that's how you see that the World Bank is actually the trigger point for the BRICS countries to actually really take over. And when they say, well, we're going to go start our own separate development bank, that, you know, it's really going to just transform the World Bank into making it what it's supposed to be, as opposed to, you know, a
so you're thinking it's going to make them honest a little more?
Well,
so
look, it's I mean, the amount of corruption that is out there is so incredible, and the amount of sensitivity of people to going along with the corruption as opposed to standing up to it, we've got our work cut out for us. It's not going to be easy. And even when the cabal isn't there, learning how to manage things for the collective good as opposed to hoarding something for your own benefit or for the benefit of your group or something. I mean, we've got some fundamental value work to do about what's good for a person. Because I mean, you just don't feel as good. It's a real joy to be doing something for the benefit of everybody.
Absolutely.
I mean, there's
something
that
matters. A lot of us
that
don't do this for profit, you know, so.
Exactly. Absolutely. I mean, you know, you do it because it's a good feeling. It's a very good reward to know that you're doing the right thing.
My last question for you is, you did mention something about the nuclear detonation off of South Carolina. I was wondering if you could touch on that again and tell me anything that you might know about that, because I actually had reported on that myself, and to little avail, nobody really looked at it. And I was just wondering, you know, you had kind of confirmed what I had seen, and I was wondering, you know, what you knew about that.
Well, just as simple, I mean, what I said, except that I can't find my notes. Maybe you know the name of those two naval officers who were the ones that got the word out so that it detonated in the ocean as opposed to on the heads of the citizens.
Yeah, that's what I've been hearing, too.
Yeah,
so
they had a really nice thing lined up for us.
Yeah, I found it very interesting that Senator Graham had, you know, warned about a nuclear attack on Charleston Harbor the next day. Alex Jones did report on this, but there was an undocumented nuke transfer from Dyess Air Force Base in Texas to an undisclosed location in South Carolina. And then October 8th, there was a 4.8 magnitude earthquake approximately 600 miles off of Charleston. And due to this, from what I read, the seismological information had basically indicated that it was not a natural occurring earthquake, meaning it didn't start off with a real slow rumble and kind of crescendo or, you know, get bigger. It actually was very large, and then it died down. So they're thinking it was a man-made event. So I just found it very interesting that you had confirmed that, and I just wanted to thank you for putting that out there.
I think when the mainstream people hear about how these two heroes, I'm fumbling around to see if I can get their names, how these two heroes were thanked.
Yeah, they're highly decorated.
Yeah,
There's been a purge of a lot of those military commanders lately, and those
yes,
two 197 in specific.
Of them.
Yeah, those two in specific were tied to the nuclear arsenal.
We actually have 4 minutes before we're cut off, guys.
Gotcha.
Joel, it's been a couple weeks, but it was good hearing from you again.
Yeah, thanks, man. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely, and I mean we will have you on again. I can almost assure you of that. I just wanted to before we. Get out of the way here, and I do my little song and dance. Thank everybody. Karen, can you just clear up any questions anybody would have as far as any political ties you have? Are you involved in any kind of party, or do you consider yourself an independent?
I can tell you that both the Democrats and the Republicans, I hold them in equal contempt.
Very, very nice. Very nice. Well, Karen, I'm going
like
to go ahead and thank everybody. I'm going to start with you, and then I'll go to Jap, and then I'll do a little closing. But thank you for coming on.
Thanks a lot.
We are going to put your website up on our page too, and we already have your Facebook page posted for our promo for the show. You might
people
get some friend requests. You might get some messages. I can't vouch that all of them are going to be 100% on the up and up, but I'm sure in the past two decades you have probably come to expect it.
And thank you for having me.
And I would love to have a discussion sometime in the future on the Biz Bank with you as well, preferably live, if we could.
Okay.
Yeah, I'd definitely like to talk about the biz at some point in time, and somebody that's been in the business like you would be perfect. Jeff, you had so many problems tonight.
Oh, man.
I've
been cut out five times.
So many. In fact, you were just cut out right before I came to you. But you still got your shots in. I mean, you still got your kicks in. We still were able to kick around the Illuminati just a little bit together. You got some good
That's
shots off.
Good
Thanks.
Thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Nope,
and
no
thank you, for trying over and over again. I appreciate it. Do you have anything you want to say real quick before I close out?
Not really. Just thanks everybody for listening in. Thanks to Karen especially. Keep spreading the information. That's the most important part. Get the information out there. Spread it with your friends, your family, people who can get it out more easy. That's the way how we keep it rolling, and that's the most important part. Just keep the information rolling. George Orwell once said, the future belongs to the persons, well, to the people who hold the information. That's the most important part.
Right. Well, to close out, we have optimists that listen to our show. We have pessimists. We have people that consider themselves realists. I would say that optimists and pessimists both consider themselves realists. There is a lot of people that are going to say that there's just no way that this can ever be won. And there's going to be a lot of people that say you have to always have hope. For me, it really doesn't matter. You got to fight either way because that's the mission. You don't lay down and die. You don't let somebody just cut you at the knees. That's not what you do. Every weapon, and I just talked with Blair about this during the show, every weapon that the elite tries to use on us to suppress us, whether it's phones, internet, or even tanks or vehicles, everything can be turned against them. We can all use it in a positive manner. It just takes some wit. It takes some education. It takes some information. It takes some networking. It's as simple as that. It really is. It doesn't get any simpler. So I thank you, everybody, for listening in. And Ruthann, thank you for...
Tommy.
For having us.
Yeah.
I don't know. Okay.
Thank you for hosting us, as always. You know, sometimes we have a bad mouth on the show, and we talk a lot of junk, and we talk a lot of mess, but at least we have a platform. And like I said, as long as one of us lives, we always will. And we love our whistleblowers, and we will always give them a chance to talk. That's just the way it is.
That's right.
Somebody has got to do it.
All right, guys. Keep fighting and keep it real. Have a great night.
Thanks, guys. Thanks, Karen.
Good night,
all right,
everyone.
Guys. Bye-bye.
See you next week.